Բարի երեկո, սիրելի հայրենակիցներ, ինչպես երկու շաբաթ առաջ ունեցանք հաղորդաշարը բարոն Քրիստոֆեր Ջոն Բյուջենսի հետ, այսօր մենք շարունակենք երկրորդ մասը այդ հաղորդումին, ուրեմն նորեն մենք խոսենք անգլերեն լեզվով այս հաղորդումը։ Անցյալ անգամ բավականին մեծ արձագանք ելավ, այսօր մենք շարունակենք այդ նյութը հայոց ցեղասպանության վերաբերյալ, ինչպես զիոնիստական շարժումը նախապատրաստել էր մեր ցեղասպանությունը։ Ուրեմն մենք ժամանակ չանցնենք, մենք մեկ անգամ էլ ներթանք բարոն Քրիստոֆեր Ջոնսին։ Good afternoon, Mr. Christopher Jones. How are you?
Very good, sir. How are you?
Praise the Lord. We had a topic last time about the Jewish genocide of the Armenian Christians and about the book, actually, that you wrote. And I believe there is a second edition for it.
Yes, I put up an enlarged second edition, which your listeners can find at jewishracism.com, mm-hmm. JewishRacism.com, and it includes many new interesting facts.
And I would like to, first of all, thank you for last time that you had, and we welcome you the second time to our show, to the, our Armenian community, actually. I would like to also talk about the topic of the new edition that you made about Ataturk, if you can elaborate on that, please.
Well, there was an article published in the Jewish Daily Forward from New York back in 1994, mm-hmm. which revealed that Mustafa Kemal, who was called Ataturk, father of the Turks, identified himself as a descendant of Shabbatai Tsevi, who was a false Jewish messiah in the 1600s, who started this cult of Jews who wanted to create a revolution worldwide, and they based it on the Lurian Kabbalah. And one of Shabbatai Tsevi's successors was Baruch Yah Russo, who started the Derme cult in Salonika, Greece, which eventually perpetrated the Young Turk Revolution and the genocide of the Armenians.
And how has been the response since the last show we made? Can you talk about that a little bit? Are there any interests?
The response has been very positive. I've been contacted by several Armenians. They were all very grateful for my bringing this information out and collecting it all into one source. They're interested. They want to help to disseminate the information, and I'm very grateful to the Armenian community for that.
Do you know if you have been contacted by any Armenian organizations?
Not as far as I know. You are the only and the primary, well, the only Armenian organization that has taken a serious interest in it, and I'm very grateful to you for that, and I look forward to working with you in the future to help educate Armenians as to this aspect of their history.
When you say you were contacted with some Armenians, I guess it was just individuals, I take it?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
You also talked about the individual that was in England, Malcolm, in the book.
Yes, James A. Malcolm, who was allegedly of Persian-Armenian descent, but I suspect he may well have been a crypto-Jew because he was a very ardent Zionist and took a much greater interest in promoting Zionism than he did in promoting Armenian independence.
And could we talk about his role in the propagandizing the genocide, the Zionism?
That's another thing that I added to the book to give the reader a greater understanding of what happened and a more definite perspective. James A. Malcolm was the one who introduced the idea to the British government that they could utilize international Zionism to draw America into the First World War on the side of the Allies. Mm-hmm. This was in a period when the French were deserting, the British were weakening, and the Germans were about to win the war, so the Zionists had a great deal of leverage to get whatever they wanted done. Both the Germans and the British were desperate to gain the support of the Zionist community, and Malcolm came up with the idea that he could go to Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, who was blackmailing President Wilson, because President Wilson had sent love letters to a woman named Mrs. Peck, and they had these love letters.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandeis was made a Supreme Court justice by blackmailing Wilson based on these letters. He also got the Federal Reserve Act passed, the Income Tax Act passed. And Malcolm came up with the idea that if the British were to issue the Balfour Declaration, promising the Jews a homeland in Palestine after the war, that the Jews in America would insist that President Wilson bring America into the war on the side of the British and defeat the Germans.
And he was basically, in your belief, he was a crypto-Jew, or are there any facts behind it?
It's a belief at this point. I haven't had the opportunity to trace out his lineage and to look exactly into it. I suspect it strongly, though, because even into the 30s and 40s and 50s even, I think he died in 52,
mm-hmm.
he was a very strong supporter of Zionism.
He
published several letters to the editor in the London Times, for example, and his obituary in the London Times included a couple paragraphs by a so-called Zionist correspondent, which again reaffirmed the fact that it was Malcolm who engineered the, they call it a quid pro quo, this for that contract between World Jewry and the British government, that if the British government issued the Balfour Declaration, Zionist Jews would bring America into the war on the side of the British. Now, it's significant because this extended the war for two more years and resulted in millions more deaths and a great expense to Americans. It was really a treacherous act that Malcolm performed.
And what role he played in the Armenian organizations?
What role did he play in the Armenian organizations?
Yes.
He drafted letters to encourage the Zionists and to provide them with the Armenian support. I forget the name of the exact thing, but these letters were republished in the New York Times and I believe in the London Times. At a time when the Balfour Declaration was issued, he came out very strongly in support of it, of course. It had all been his idea from the beginning. And I suspect he may have been a Rothschild agent.
You said Rothschild. Of course, Rothschilds were the financiers of the genocide.
Yes, and the Rothschilds also were long-time Zionists. The whole schemes originated with the Rothschilds in the early 1800s. And you'll notice that the Balfour Declaration was made out directly to Lord Rothschild, which establishes a contract between the British people and Lord Rothschild. And the Rothschilds also had their agents write extensively in the 1840s that they sought to become the king of the Jews and to rule from Jerusalem.
Basically, they still believe they're the king of the Jews, which they want to build a Temple of Solomon, which, according to the history, is going to be the Antichrist.
Yes.
Which biblical proofs we can see. What would you...
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's directly stated in the Psalms of David, and they believe that they descend from King David and that they are the divine lineage.
It's very interesting to me, Armenia and basically the land of Palestine is way too far from each other. In your opinion, what's the main ideology behind it that they wanted to destroy the Armenians in order to rebuild Jerusalem, state of Israel?
The Armenians served the Turkish Empire very well, and they were the intelligentsia and the ministers and the lawyers and the doctors and the professionals, and they kept the Ottoman Empire thriving. And by wiping out the Armenians, the Jews were able to destroy the Ottoman Empire, which was their goal because the Ottoman Empire controlled Palestine. So in order to destroy the Turkish Empire, it was a good move, though an evil move on their part, to destroy the Armenians. Another thing is that both Armenia and the Jews represent ancient peoples who wanted to reestablish their nations as independent nations after the Turkish Empire was partitioned.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to partition the Turkish Empire, they first have to destroy it. And one of the ways that they destroyed it was by pitting Christians and Muslims against one another. So by having the crypto-Jews slaughter the Armenians, they were able to blame it on the Muslims and start the Balkan Wars to partition the Turkish Empire in Europe, which eventually led to the First World War, which completely destroyed the empire, and then they were able to partition it up and try to seize control of Palestine. That was the plan. It didn't work out exactly as they expected because many Jews did not want to participate in it, but that was the goal.
So for years they have been able to manipulate the Armenian mind, thinking that the Muslims, Muslims were perpetrators of the Armenian genocide. For years it has been passed. For lately, there are proofs to researchers and to historians that it was Talat and the rest of these non-human individuals, they were crypto-Jews, who perpetrated the Armenian genocide. In your own opinion, have you done a research how they have kept this secret?
They've kept it secret because they've maintained a stranglehold on the Turkish government. And they set the Turkish government up to deny that the genocide even occurred, mm-hmm. and thereby implicate the Turkish people as the instigators and perpetrators of it. Because people don't realize that the Turkish government is actually run by Derneğin Jews. And they were also able to do it by limiting the influence of the Turkish government. After they had destroyed the Turkish Empire, they made it a very independent force under Atatürk that got rid of the idea of any imperialism, and therefore they were able to alienate themselves from the Armenian people and put them under the control of the Soviet Jews. And another thing is that they have great influence in the mass media and in the governments of the world, and they have consistently tried to block the spread of information about the Armenian genocide. Just a decade ago, it was almost unheard of. Many, many people weren't even aware of it, let alone aware of the fact that it was actually a Jewish genocide perpetrated against Armenian Christians.
And I understand they have been able to keep the secret, but have they used the Armenian individuals, organizations, in order to keep the secrets?
Well, there's always been a taboo about blaming Jews for anything, because immediately when you do, you're called anti-Semitic. So even the honest Armenian investigators who looked into this genocide are very reluctant to bring up the Zionist issue and the fact that crypto-Jews were behind it for fear of being stigmatized as anti-Semites. I think their primary goal is first to gain acknowledgement that the genocide itself existed, which will inevitably lead researchers to the conclusion that it was perpetrated by crypto-Jews. There are the letters from Gerard Loether, who was the ambassador from the British government to the Ottoman Empire, where he writes to the British Foreign Office that this was really a Jewish takeover and not a Turkish revolution, and that these crypto-Jews utilized Freemasonry in order to organize the revolution and perpetrated it, and that all the leaders were Jews and Freemasons, and that it was funded through Jewish bankers and Jewish influence, and its goal was a Zionist goal to establish a Jewish state in Palestine and to destroy Muslim unity and the integrity of the Turkish Empire, and they were highly successful in that.
And now, of course, we know Turkey is basically controlled by the same powers. And
especially in the military. Atatürk was succeeded by the Turkish military as the overseer of the Turkish people, and the Turkish people who are secular, those who followed Atatürk, now follow the military, and they look to the military as a watchdog that they believe is absolutely apolitical, and they want it to remain a secular society as Atatürk had proposed, and Turks have great faith that the military will protect them from within and without, and they allow this military to become a sort of military dictatorship. And they believe that this military will protect them, but they don't realize that this military is actually completely in the control of the Derneğin Jews, which is why Turkey, against its Islamic interests, has always been a strong sponsor of Israel.
And lately we hear the vicious murders of Christians in Turkey as we speak. The Armenian individual that was killed, Hrant Dink, also three missionaries, they were butchered, and the blame is going on the Islamist fanatics. Do you have any idea or research on that?
Well, it's a very interesting and sophisticated game that they're playing between the PKK and Turkey, and the Kurds are being trained by the Mossad to perpetrate acts of terrorism against Turks and Armenians and against Iraqis in order to foment a war in the region which will bring in Iran, Syria, Turkey, and certainly Armenia. And Armenia is also in a unique position because of its strong ties to Russia, both historically and in terms of their need for energy resources. And they don't have good relations with either Turkey or Azerbaijan. They have a little bit better relations with Georgia, which serves as a gateway to Europe. But I think their strongest ties are to Russia. And one of the goals of World Jewry is to again attack Russia and instigate a nuclear war with Russia. And the Armenians are inevitably going to be caught up in that. And the Turks, I think, are being utilized as the key instigators of this, just as they were utilized in the Armenian genocide to attack the Armenians as cohorts of the Turk. And they were promised that after the First World War, they would be given a Kurdistan, just as the Armenians were promised by President Wilson, who, again, was being blackmailed by Justice Brandeis. Wilson promised Armenians that they would be given an independent nation. And Wilson and the Zionists reneged on that promise, and it was given over to the Soviet Union. And the Kurds are again going to get slammed after all this happens, if they don't realize it.
Obviously, we know not everybody is a Zionist, but there is a power which we all have heard of, Freemasonry, which could we a little bit elaborate, what is it controlled by, Freemasonry? Does it have any secret powers that is collaborating with Zionists?
Freemasonry evolved as a secret society in which people could meet and exchange ideas that they couldn't openly exchange in society. And in order to join it, you have to reveal all your personal secrets. And once you reveal your personal secrets, you're not only revealing your personal secrets, but other people's personal secrets, and you're liable to blackmail. So people who get high up in Freemasonry are people who can be controlled, and they promote them into positions of power, especially in politics. Now, there's a specific sect in Freemasonry called the Scottish Rite. And the Jews became involved with Freemasonry in the 1700s through the Frankist movement and through the Dernmay Turks of Salonika, who wanted to instigate revolution. Mm-hmm. And the Freemason societies, including the Illuminati with Adam Weishaupt, were able to allow the Jews to funnel in funds, to speak in private, and to corrupt politicians in order to subvert these societies. And in Europe, there was a great convulsion of revolutions in 1848, which Disraeli, who was a Zionist Jew, anticipated and wrote about in 1844. So Freemasonry has been an institution both to corrupt people, to manage people, and to spread revolutions. It was involved in the American Revolution. It was involved in the French Revolution. It was involved in the Young Turk Revolution. And it was also involved in the Russian Revolution. Trotsky and Lenin were high-level Freemasons.
And Marx.
And Marx, absolutely. And Adolf Daniel and several other Jews in the Israelite Alliance Universelle. I forget the exact title.
I believe also Hitler was somehow in the secret society.
Hitler was absolutely an agent of the Zionists. He was funded by the Zionists. He sprouted out of organizations which had been created by the Zionists, such as the Tula Gesellschaft.
Right.
And all of these secret societies are being utilized, especially today in the Middle East. Freemasonry is a very big problem because it allows Zionist Jews to recruit Islamic traitors into their cause, and you'll see that most of the all of the governments of the Middle East have been corrupted by people involved in Freemasonry and other secret societies, such as in Iran, they have the Hojiatiyah, who are supposedly a sect of Shiite Muslims who are trying to provoke a world war so that their Messiah will arrive, but are actually sponsored by communist Jews to subvert Iran against its own interests, to create a conflict whereby the Zionist Jews can wipe out Iran.
Which makes, in political world, it makes big sense that it's in their best interest, basically. I would also like to ask you, in your book you have Noahidic laws at the end. Could you a little bit elaborate on those laws?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
Noahidic laws.
Oh, Noahide laws, yes. The Jews believe that Noah was given a covenant with God and that there were seven laws given in the time of Noah, which therefore apply to all human beings because Noah is the father of the modern human race, and that Gentiles are compelled to obey these seven laws. And these laws are set forth in the Talmud, in the Book of Sanhedrin, folios 56 to 60. And they say that all Gentiles are compelled to recognize that there is God and only one God, and that idol worship is forbidden. Those are the big ones of the Noahide laws.
They consider the Christians as idol worshippers, basically.
Yes, in the Talmud and in the Toledot Yehuda, it specifically states that Jesus is an idol. Mm-hmm. Therefore, Christians who worship Jesus will be beheaded. And you'll notice that in the revolutions in which Jews take over, they impose these Noahide laws on the Gentiles. For example, in the French Revolution, they chopped off the heads of Christians and tried to make the French people worship their government. And it was a form of enforcing the Noahide laws on the Gentiles. And you'll notice that even today, well, especially today, in our own American Congress, we have rabbis coming before the Congress, especially from a specific group of ultra-Orthodox Jews known as the Chabad-Lubavitch movement.
Mm-hmm.
And they are saying that the laws of Congress are based on the Noahide laws.
Aren't those rabbis also anti-Zionists?
No. The anti-Zionists are Natura Karta.
Now, they're basically certain, what, 5%, 10%?
I don't think they themselves know how large their movement is, and it swells and shrinks as political things change. They say that it's more a representation of an attitude than an actual organized group. Mm-hmm. Now, the Natura Karta are based on the Talmudic commandments in the book of Ketubot 111a. Which state that the Jews are forbidden to return to Palestine until the Messiah arrives and can take no political actions to try to bring about the arrival of the Messiah, and they are also commanded to be obedient to the governments under which they live. Now, there was a split that happened in the ultra-Orthodox community when Theodor Herzl came around, and they are all descended from the same ultra-Orthodox community, which are ultimately descended from the Frankist Jews, but there was a split along the idea of Zionism. But after the State of Israel was founded in 1948, or 47, depending on how you want to look at it, the ultra-Orthodox community had this lineage which ultimately resulted in Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who was the head of the Chabad-Lubavitch movement. And I think it started out with Tor Balsam, or whatever his name was. And they had the mythology that there would be seven of these leaders who they look upon as precursors to the Messiah, and that when the seventh one dies, the Jewish Messiah will arrive. And the Chabad Lubavitch, which ultimately started out as anti-Zionist, became strongly Zionist in the 1950s, especially under Mendel Menachem Schneerson, who I think died in the late 1990s, and who is looked upon by many of the Lubavitchers as the Messiah, as the King of the Jews. And they believe that his spirit is alive and will manifest itself soon, especially after the Jews rebuild the temple in Jerusalem.
So how is it that they've been able to be organized so strongly and destroy cultures and nationalities? The first genocide was the Armenian genocide. How is it that they can assimilate in different cultures but yet keep their own? Is it through the Talmud they read? Is it through the Zohar they read? Or What kind of power is it that keeps them united?
There are two primary aspects. One is their racism, which is rooted in Judaism, and the other is their great wealth. And those two things work very well together because they're able to corrupt things through their tribal loyalty to one another. They form a cohesive group, and then they utilize their own members as crypto-Jews to break up the cohesiveness of all other societies. they always try to get brothers fighting against brothers in the other societies where, well, they maintain absolute cohesiveness. And that gives them a tremendous advantage in their political battles. And Judaism also entails a mythology that the Jews have to be spread out to the ends of the earth in order for the Messiah to arrive. So the Jews wanted to travel to every single country. And they are also told in their religious mythology that they have to destroy all the Gentile governments and take control of those governments. So they have a plan that other people don't have that they are carrying out, and they are very faithful to that plan, and they have the means to carry it out, both because they store knowledge as to how to do it, they are taught how to do it in the Talmud, and they have an unethical code of conduct that allows them to do these things as obedience to God, which other human groups would see as evil.
Now, we know that not all Jews follow this methodology or theology they have, the Talmud or Zohar. How many percent follow it?
I suspect that well over 90% are unaware of what it really signifies, and that was also by design. The Jewish leaders wanted to keep the Jewish people ignorant, and ultimately in the 1700s, this Shabbatayan movement wanted to make the Jews secular and to pretend to convert to Christianity and Islam and ultimately to become atheistic, which is also part of the plan. They believe that the Messiah will arrive when the Jewish people themselves have become heretical. So there has been a strong push in Jewry through the communist movement and through other liberal utopian movements which replace Jewish mythology with a political mythology of Jewish world rule, one world government, Jews controlling all the wealth, Jews being the light unto the nations, which provide all nations with Jewish culture and Jewish moral codes, which they see as being a positive thing. But the reality is that in order to institute Jewish rule, in order to institute Jewish culture, and in order to institute Jewish religion and moral codes, they have to destroy the governments, the cultures, and the religions of every other human being. And they always look upon it as their duty, without many of them, without realizing even that what they're doing is very highly destructive, and if it were done to them, they would resent it very strongly and call it anti-Semitism. There's a strong double standard built into Judaist mythologies, which blinds them to the fact that what they're doing is destructive and murderous. And we can see it in the way that they treat the Nazi genocide of the European Jewry in a very different light from the way they treat the Jewish communist genocide of the Slavic people and of the Chinese people and of the Cambodians, for example.
And,
there's a strong double standard in Jewish culture, and it's not always done with malicious intent. It's done through an arrogance that they're not even aware of.
But their leaders are aware of it, obviously.
Their leaders are aware of it, they delight in it, and they view it as a religious obligation.
They have a plan.
They're racist. They are racist. They think that they are a superior race, that other human beings are subhuman, and that God, the Jewish people have a divine DNA, which is godly, and that non-Jewish people have a DNA which was injected into the human race when they say Eve fornicated with the serpent and created Cain. They believe that non-Jews are descended from Cain and they are descended from Adam, and that they're a holy divine race, and they have to destroy non-Jews in order for God to come back and create divine order on the earth.
But those beliefs, they don't even exist in the Torah. They came from Talmud, which is not even the Word of God. It's a Babylonian religion. They took it in.
Well, even within the Torah and within the Hebrew Bible and in the Psalms of David, they establish what evolved into their messianic myths. And yes, I agree with you that this was an evolution that took place after the initial books were written. But even within those, you see the seeds, and there are strongly racist statements in the Torah itself where the Jews are a divine chosen people to be above all other nations, to rule all other nations, and to destroy all other nations. That is strongly within the Torah itself.
But in the logical world, or in the logical mind, let's put it, God that is presented in the New Testament, who is love, I would not think for a second the God of love would ever commend these evil thoughts.
Well, we have to look at the New Testament as what it is. New Testament literally means new covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were several covenants. As I said, there was the covenant with Noah, and then we had the covenant with Abraham, where Abraham represents a selected race to inherit the land of Palestine and to be the chosen people. If the Jews obeyed, it was a conditional covenant. The Jews violated the conditions of that covenant, and they also rejected their Messiah. Now, I'm speaking in Christian beliefs, not in my own beliefs. They also rejected the Messiah, Jesus, who arrived as the King of the Jews. Now, when they did that, they broke the covenant, and there was a new covenant, which is called the New Testament, that was established through Jesus and through his sacrifice, which gave redemption not only to the Jewish people, but to all of mankind. And that was the ultimate sacrifice of redemption, which ends all other sacrifices. And it is only by way of Jesus that people obtain redemption and salvation. And that is the Christian ideology, which is very different from the Judaic ideology. Now, modern Jews have tried to blend the two into something they call Judeo-Christianity, which is a mythology. Now, it is true that Christianity evolved out of Judaism. It is also true that Christianity represents a new covenant. Now, this new world that will be created is a heavenly kingdom in Christianity. For the Jews, it is a worldly kingdom. For the Christians, all of these things must be done by God himself, who can be the ultimate arbiter of who is good and who is evil. Now, there was a break in Jewish tradition where they decided that God was not acting to restore the Jewish people to Palestine, so they would have to act on their own behalf and become their own Messiah. And this was clearly stated by Moses Hess in his book, Rome and Jerusalem. So the Jewish people decided that they, as a cohesive force, could act to bring these things about. And they've done it through communism and through other things and through Zionism to try to make it happen, which is very, very different from the Christian faith. But they have also subverted many Christian faiths. And you see today in America the Christian Zionist movement.
That's true.
Where these people are also trying to bring about highly destructive wars that will ruin the human race. And they had been taught by the Jews that they would be so-called raptured up into heaven while all this happened. And that by committing nuclear war against, say, the Russian people, they will actually be doing a good deed because they will hasten the end times and cause Jesus to return to the earth, and that after the tribulation, they themselves will be restored to this heavenly kingdom. But this has all been a process of Judaization, of the ruin of Christianity.
You're right on the track, but also we have to think about the Christian Zionism is destructive to the church. It's destroying the real Christian philosophy and theology, because God never told to kill the Muslims or to kill the Chinese or to kill the Armenians. In your research, who are today's Amalekites, which is a secret to the world, but to Jews and the Zionists, they know who are the Amalekites?
Well, the Jews had for thousands of years the mythology that the Armenians were the Amalekites, and that was one of the reasons that they committed genocide specifically against the Armenians.
The first, I believe it was 953, the documented words through some rabbi. It was 953, I believe.
953, then you're aware of something that I'm not aware of, and I would be interested for the exact source of that. That's very interesting. I knew it was in the Byzantine Empire, and that goes way back before 953, but it's interesting that you have a source for that.
I recently read about it after reading your article. It was in 953, there was a comment made that Armenians were Amalekites. I read it through internet research.
That's very interesting. Now, the Amalekites serve as a convenient racist basis for the Jews to stigmatize people that they want to destroy. For example, when they wanted to destroy the German people, they referred to them as the Amalekites. Today, they refer to the Palestinians as the Amalekites.
Yes.
And it creates an us versus them mentality and dehumanizes other human groups. And it provides them with a religious basis and with a call to arms for the whole tribe to unite against this force. And it's such a powerful force because the mythology is that the Amalekites want to exterminate the Jews, when the reality is that the Jews want to exterminate their enemies. So by identifying the people that they want to destroy as the Amalekites, they scapegoat those people for their hatred of them, and they give themselves a religious justification for the mass murder of those people. And they committed mass murder against the Germans during the war and after the war. They committed mass murder against the Russians, and they committed mass murder against the Armenians.
These
were all people whom they've identified as being the Amalekites.
I believe just like they used the Armenian leaders to manipulate them to different kinds of freedoms, they're using the Christian leaders today, manipulating them, and we're expecting the genocide of the Christians very soon again, United States probably.
Absolutely. It's an exact analogy where you had the Armenians being led to believe that they should conduct a revolution in the Ottoman Empire that would result in an independent Armenia and an independent Judea. They brought the Armenians into conflict with the Turkish Empire and used them to create a casus belli, a grounds of war between European Christians and the Turks. And today they are manipulating American Christians to believe that Muslims are their enemy. The same thing is happening again. And they're trying to get American Christians to serve as their army to destroy Muslims, which will also weaken America. You can see that the American economy is being severely weakened by all this debt which is accruing through these wars, and also our moral fiber is being corrupted because we're being made hateful. We're being made into racists who want to kill people who have done no harm to us. This, again, is exactly what they did to the Germans when they put the Nazis in power. They taught German school children to hate the Jews, which ultimately they knew would result in the destruction of Germany. And they are doing the same thing to America. America is today the most powerful military force on earth. And since the Jews view themselves as being God's divine presence and the divine rulers of the earth, they want to utilize that force to destroy itself and ultimately leave the world in such a weakened state that this small minority population of Jews will be able to manage it and run it as they managed the vast Soviet Empire when they destroyed it and put Jews into positions of power, or put people into power who had Jews at their elbow the way they had Stalin with Lazar Kaganovich. They're undergoing the same process. They first pump up the economy of a nation so that it builds up its military to a highly developed point. And then when that military is developed to that point, they use that military to weaken the society itself and to bring it into conflict with other societies. And they try to build up these armies and make them very strong so that when they do come into conflict, it is highly destructive. And that destruction allows them to institute revolutions. And when they institute revolutions, they establish chaos. And they then propose the idea that the only means of resolving this chaos is to have an iron-fisted dictator come in and seize power over the nation. And that will then restore order. And once order is restored, the society can evolve into democracy and eventually into communism. But it never happens that way. As soon as they get their puppet dictator into power, they destroy the intellectual structure of the nation, they destroy its culture, and they try to undermine all the heritage that people has. In order for the Jews to rule the world, they have to ensure that there are no competitive forces who also have a strong heritage and a sense of their own sovereignty and a sense of their own independence. So it is critical for them to get people pitted against one another so that they destroy themselves and destroy their own governments. We can see that America is being set up in this way because the American people are coming to hate their own government. They're coming to hate George Bush. And with their control over the media, they are able to mask the fact that George Bush is doing all of these things at the behest of world Jewry and at the behest of the nation of Israel.
When we go back to the Armenian genocide, the first genocide of the century, until today, in the world governments, most world governments, I could say, they don't recognize the genocide. But in the Second World War, they claimed the Holocaust, And if anybody denies in some countries about the Holocaust, they go to prison, and basically they are looked at the enemy of the state. What are the powers behind denying the Armenian genocide? I would like to have it in detail, the names of the organizations who are against recognition of the Armenian genocide. One of them I would like to ask is Freemasonry.
Freemasonry, I cannot cite a specific example where Freemasonry, in the name of Freemasonry, has denied the Armenian genocide. I have seen Freemasons as individuals come forward and try to say that what happened was not a genocide, that the Turks were defending themselves from Armenian revolutionaries, and that the figures of the dead are supposedly grossly exaggerated. If you have information which specifically ties Freemasonry as an institution to such denials, I would be very interested to see that. I have seen the Israeli government itself and high officials in the Israeli government go around the world and use their influence to keep other governments from recognizing the genocide. And the excuse they use, again, they scapegoat the Turks. For example, the Israelis will come to the U.S. Congress and say, well, you can't recognize the Armenian genocide because we need the Turks at this moment, and this will alienate us from the Turks and will create political conflict between America and Turkey. So they're scapegoating the Turks for what it is that the Israelis want to do. And the Israelis have many motivations for doing it. They want to maintain the idea that the Holocaust of European Jewry was a unique event in history. But as we are revealing, they ultimately want to keep it hidden, the fact that it was Jews who perpetrated this genocide, and that it predated the European genocide of the Jews, and it was done as a Holocaust, as a human sacrifice. It was called a Holocaust in the literature of the day, and it represents another genocide. It's even, in some senses, it's a worse genocide in the way that it was conducted and in the percentage of the population that was wiped out.
And but in the
even that had precursors in Cecil Rhodes and the involvement of the Rothschilds in South Africa and in the Boer Wars, where they first established concentration camps.
In the same context, we see the church in the United States is being controlled by the Zionists, and the churchgoers, they're brainwashed into believing that Jews are the chosen people, which, again, we talk about superior people, superhuman beings. Let's put it that way.
Superhuman beings who can commit evil acts, and the Christian Zionists believe that they have to support them anyway. They have to turn a blind eye to all the evil that Israel does. And this is completely against the original doctrines of Christianity.
Absolutely.
Christianity is meant to be a universalist religion. It represents a new covenant. The old covenant was destroyed because the Jews were disobedient to God. And in this new covenant, Jesus says that the peacemakers are blessed, and that we should love one another and help one another. And Israel is built on perpetual war. They want to have war after war so that they can acquire more and more of the Arabs' land. They believe that they have a divine right to take the land from the Nile to the Euphrates, and they are utilizing the American Christians as a hammer to conduct this. And this plan was set forth long ago by Judge Noah, and I quote his writings in my book, The Jewish Genocide of Armenian Christians. And he established the idea of utilizing the American Christians as a military power to wipe out the Turks and to wipe out Islam. But even before then, Jews were creating the precursors of Christian Zionism and the Protestant movement by trying to pit the Turks against the Russians and the Turks against the Protestants and the Protestants against the Catholics and Western Europe against Eastern Europe. They're always trying to generate wars and hatreds and racism. It has been a consistent pattern for hundreds of years, for thousands of years. And it's the only way that they can accomplish what they want to accomplish, because they themselves only represent 12 to 15 million people, at the high end, 20 million people. And they simply don't have the means to do it. But instead of abandoning this racism, they utilize corrupted means to fulfill their messianic prophecies. And one of those corrupt means has been the corruption of the Christian Zionist movement. And I think Tex Mars did a wonderful interview with Robbie Noel where he pointed out that he was being solicited to join the Christian Zionist movement, and it was made very clear to him that there was a lot of money in doing so, and that his book would be heavily promoted, his pulpit would be heavily promoted, if he were to sponsor Christian Zionism, which is actually a contradiction in terms, and he would have no part in it, and instead has come out strongly against it. And you can see Jerry Falwell, I think he got a jet from the Israeli government, and today the big man is...
John Hagee.
Yes, and you see him, when he poses, he usually has Israeli flags blended with American flags, as if this were good for America to have obedience to a little problematic nation in the Middle East, which we have no ties to.
Well,
that nation is the enemy of the United States. Israel is the worst enemy that the United States has ever had. It is perpetually bringing us into war. It's perpetually bringing us into debt. It is corrupting our minds with racist and hateful ideologies. You see many Zionist Jews taking every opportunity to bring up the Holocaust and to try to tie it to Islam and to say that we have to destroy Islam just as we should have destroyed Hitler before he gained full power. It's terrible. They're perpetually ginning up wars and perpetually creating problems for America. And they have subverted these Christian churches to sponsor it. And they're very powerful. They represent 30 to 40 million American Christians.
Which is a...
And their ultimate goal is horrific. Their goal is to create a nuclear world war.
To destroy the Amalekites. Or the
destroy
Christian nations.
The human race. They have created the mythology that there must be an apocalyptic war which will wipe out two-thirds of Jews and I think one-third of the human race, and that at the end of this tribulation, Jesus will return, and these people, many of them, a very large percentage of them, believe that this will happen in their lifetime. Now, this represents a political swing vote in our national elections, and Karl Rove and the neoconservatives created this swing vote to sponsor the Zionist movement. It was all done deliberately. It has nothing to do with true theology, and it is the absolute corruption of Christianity to turn it from a religion, a universalist religion of love, into a slave religion that worships Jews as if they are God and sponsors the inhuman acts that the Jews of Israel are committing against their neighbors and against the human race.
Christopher, I would like to ask you a question, very important question, because for years and years the Armenian people have been going back and forth every April 24 demonstrating one day a year, where versus we see Judaizers, they're pretty much determined to do their job every which way they want, they have to, in order to succeed their politics. But we see Armenians, our people, once a year demonstrating in front of the Turkish consulate, raising their voices to recognize the Armenian genocide, and we have no answers for the past 100 years, almost 100 years. What would you say to the Armenian people in order to wake up and see the real picture behind it?
I think that as soon as the Armenian people point the finger at the true culprits, there will be a lot of attention focused on it, and they will be forced to try to misinform the public as to what happened. And I think that also if you can inform the Turkish people that they are not responsible, the Zionist Jews will no longer be able to pit the Turks against the Christians and the Christians against the Muslims. So that if you tell the truth and cut through the misinformation, mm-hmm. and really identify the true culprit, you can greatly improve the situation in the Middle East and start to create a rapprochement between the Armenians and the Turks, and you can start to unseat the power of the Derne in Turkey itself. And I think that's fundamental to gaining a healing process between the Armenians and the Turks as to what happened, and to gain universal recognition of what happened. And I hope that you and I can work together and perhaps even create an institute dedicated to researching the Jewish involvement in the Armenian Genocide, and we can establish a website. Perhaps we can produce a video documentary to spark interest in this. What really brought the Jewish Holocaust to the fore, to the world public, was in the 1970s there was a television series about the Holocaust. And that is the event that really put it into the consciousness of the American people. And the Jews have also pulled lots of funding to get Holocaust museums built, but they produce, very often they produce television documentaries, they produce films which relate to the Holocaust, and the Armenians, in order to gain that kind of a public awareness, have to do the same thing.
Absolutely. At least they were working on it. They were determined to come to a solution, but like I said, the Armenian people are determined to go to demonstration once a year, and after the demonstration go about their work. So I believe they should be more organized, and I'm pretty much in agreement with you to create the institute to do this research, and I know many Armenians will be actively joining in this institute to do the research, basically.
And you also have to learn to stigmatize people who want to deny it and people who want to create infighting among Armenians. You're going to find that world Jewry is very clever at pitting Armenians against themselves and creating dissensions and infighting that prevents you from becoming a cohesive force and prevents you from organizing such that you can put forward a single solid message. Now, the Jews have a single solid message about the Holocaust. It was a unique event in history. It was done to exterminate the Jewish race as a whole, and it was the result of German racism. Now, none of those things are actually true, but the Armenians have to form a cohesive, single message that can be expressed directly and clearly, and they have to not allow their ranks to be infiltrated by people who want to create infighting. They shouldn't argue amongst themselves. They shouldn't become paranoid that they have been infiltrated. They should instead focus on their goals and focus on creating a exact historical understanding of what happened that they can pinpoint and that they can identify with solid facts. And that has not yet happened, but I think it's a process that we can begin. And once that coheres, once it forms a solid force, you will then have the political foundation to insist that other people acknowledge this, or to then be able to accuse them of having some ulterior motive as to why they are denying it.
Like most of Americans, they were not aware of what's going on until some of these videos aired or text marks came to Los Angeles and had a very interesting topic also. People have
so
to
have
wake
to
up.
Present it, you have to sell it to the public in a way that's palatable to the public, just as the Jews have done with the Holocaust through their control of Hollywood. You have to somehow create networks where this information can be brought out, and it can be brought out in a way that's believable, understandable, and that sparks interest. And once that happens, it will catch on like wildfire.
Christopher, I would like you to repeat your website one more time for the audience.
If you go to JewishRacism.com, JewishRacism.com, you will find at the head of the page a link that goes to the enlarged second edition of my book, The Jewish Genocide of Armenian Christians. And if you begin to read that book, you will discover that the British government and the press from England that was involved in Constantinople and was highly involved in what was happening, because the British had a strong interest in that region, because the British wanted access to India and China, and they had to go through the Middle East to get there. And they also had interest in Egyptian cotton and in agricultural products from the region. And they focused in on what caused the Young Turk Revolution, who was behind it, who was behind the massacres of Christians in the Ottoman Empire, and they again and again came to the conclusion that these were crypto-Jewish Freemasons from Salonika. Well, there's no denying. It's a very well-established fact, and no one has refuted it. All they try to do is claim that it's Jew-baiting to bring these facts out. But the facts are indisputable, and I think they're gaining momentum. And the more that detractors try to minimize the significance of these facts, the more they will expose themselves as liars. So what's really needed is a professionally done video documentary where people can get the information they need in the period of an hour to 2 hours that will spark interest in this and that will expose the fact that those who try to trivialize these facts or deny these facts are liars and are trying to misinform the public.
Well, thank you very much. I will for joining our show second time because we have came to the conclusion of our time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much for having me and for giving me a forum in which to express my ideas.
Thank you. I will put you on hold. I will close the show and I will answer your phone call one more time. Please stay on hold. Ինչպես որ լսեցինք, այս հաղորդումը երկրորդ մասն էր եւ որովհետեւ ցեզի խոստացանք պիտի հրավիրենք բարոն Քրիստոֆոր Ջոն Բյուրկենզը այս եգող ամիս հուլիսին պիտի հրավիրվի Los Angeles եւ բոլորդ գնանք ներկայանալ դեսնադրան պիտի հայտարարենք երբ պիտի հոսը լայնքը ուրեմն շնորհակալություն որ մեզ հետ միացաք միջև քաշապատ ասված ես